Welcome to the Information Security Forum podcast. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert, and today we present the first of two episodes focusing on the role of the board in cybersecurity. ISF Managing Director Steve Durbin, as always, is in the studio with me today, and we're going to be discussing how often CISOs should be meeting with the board and how CISOs can be more effective in communicating and in meeting the security needs of their business. Steve, I wanted to have a conversation today about the board. We've had a number of conversations over our time together about the importance of board buy-in into cybersecurity, but I feel like it continues to be an area that needs reinforcement and a revisit.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing topic, isn't it? We're not at a stage, unfortunately, where every single board has the right level, appropriate level of cybersecurity awareness.
Do you think part of that is the perception that cyber is complex and that one needs to be an expert in order to have an informed conversation around it?
I think there is some of that. And, you know, the reality is that it is complex. Certainly, if we look at it from an IT security standpoint, you know, I wouldn't expect a board member to fully understand some of the implications or intricacies of technology and how it all comes together. But I don't think that's a role. You know, I think that it is about setting mood, it's about setting policy, it's about being aware of the implications and making the right risk-based decisions. That's, for me, is the role of the board, setting the tone, leading by example, you know, all of these sorts of things. To do that, you don't need to understand the technology. You just need to understand what cyber is doing for your business and the impact if things were to go wrong. So those are the important pieces for me.
Why is it not enough for an organization to hire a CISO and have that person report to the board periodically? Why is that not enough due diligence?
I think one of the challenges that organizations talk to me about is that there is a gap between, it's a language gap, it's an understanding gap, between perhaps the sorts of metrics that a CISO is using, the language perhaps that a CISO is using, and the way that a board views the world. If you think about an average board meeting, for instance, the amount of time that they have available to cover particular issues is very, very small. And so, you know, there's a need for a high degree of precision. And I think, therefore, that the board's role is to set very clearly what the performance indicators, metrics that they want to see should be. The CISO's role is to provide the input on those and to really provide the advice and guidance and steerage along the way. Now, for a board to do that, of course, they have to understand the role that cyber or technology plays in their business. And that has to be done in the language of the business. Now, for me, there are some lights at the end of the tunnel, if you like, in that every element of business is increasingly dependent upon technology. So we talk a lot about, you know, the need for digital transformation. We talk about the fact that technology is really driving business decisions and these kinds of things. So technology is weaving its way into the way that the organization operates anyway. And so over a period of time, I'm sure that boards will respond. The challenge now is that they need to be responding very much more quickly. In the absence of that being completely embedded into their organizations, if you see what I mean.
So boards can't afford to wait necessarily till the next quarter to deal with things that they may have wished to wait on in the past. Is that the implication?
That is certainly an implication. I think that, you know, one of the other challenges with cyber is that everything has become very much more speeded up. And that will continue. You know, as we move towards things like 5G technology infrastructure and enabling things to happen very much more quickly, some of the things that we need to have in place for things like smart cities, autonomous vehicles, all of these sorts of things to operate effectively, and just generally that migration that we have of business transactions, of business processes and practices to being technology enabled, then certainly speed of decision making is going to become something of an issue. So the board has to be assured that there are processes within the organization that allow the organization to respond appropriately in the moment. And that requires an increased agility. It requires boards to really understand the implications of that from a risk appetite standpoint, because they set the risk appetite. And it requires them to be empowering as well. People outside of the boardroom to really deal with some of these things, because you simply can't wait for a board meeting to get approval on these sorts of things. So I think it is about being able to set very clearly what that overall roadmap looks like. And to do that, the board needs a lot more insight and intelligence than it currently has into the way that technology is being used across the enterprise and the implications of that from a cyber perspective.
So do you think that the best CISOs then are people who can speak? You mentioned speaking in the language of the business itself. Yeah. Those CISOs who have very soft skills of communication and interpretation, that they can interpret how the board needs to be trained to interface with them around cybersecurity? Is that a fair expectation to place on a CISO?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's interesting to look back over the way that the role has changed. You know, today I would say that some of the best CISOs do have very, very high degrees of emotional intelligence. They are able to empathize. They are able to consult. They're able to sell. They're able to listen. They're able to communicate in a much more rounded, business-focused fashion than perhaps they were ever required to do, even 5 years ago, actually. Mm-hmm. So I think that those are all very important attributes now for a successful CISO, particularly in large organizations, where, of course, the sheer scope of the role has expanded exponentially.
Mm-hmm. And then does it work the other way? Are the best boards then those boards that have the soft skills of listening, being taught, taking in information in ways that they may not have been asked to do in the past?
Boardroom education, I think, is key in this particular space. Whether that means you take your board off, you know, to a bespoke course, perhaps, that mm-hmm. runs off-site or whatever it might be. But I think that we have to operate on both sides. Mm-hmm. So we have to raise the level of awareness and education in the boardroom of the importance of cybersecurity and technology to the business. We also have to then focus on the role of the CISO in being able to articulate back to the board some of the things we've just been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the board not just as a makeup of an entity in leadership of a business, but it's made up of individuals.
Yeah.
Do you think that board members take seriously enough the threat not only to the business at large, but to they themselves as individuals associated with high profile, maybe highly financed or dealing with sensitive material? Are they taking seriously that they may be at risk themselves?
I think that that's one of the more concerning changes, if I could put it that way, that we've started to see. Spear phishing in particular, you know, ransomware, where individuals are being targeted. And of course, if you happen to be a board member or a business leader with a relatively known profile in an organization, then you are potentially a target for these sorts of things. And I think that that message has taken a little while to get through.
Mm.
That's despite the fact that a significant proportion of all cyber attacks begin in some way, shape, or form with phishing. And so I think that there is a lot more work to be done in terms of awareness, certainly, education, yes. And really, I think laying out some pretty basic and understandable and realistic guidelines for board members. I mean, you know, we can do a number of things from a technology standpoint. So at one end, what we can do is we can issue board members with lockdown iPads, for instance, so that they're receiving their board papers on a particular device mm-hmm. that is specific to an organization, where the IT department is taking the responsibility then for protecting the data that mm-hmm. sits on that iPad. Ultimately, though, you know, a board member or anybody, it has to put in some form of password or access code. And so, you know, that's one of the challenges there in itself.
Right.
But I think that organizations need to work much more sensibly towards understanding what is appropriate, both in terms of, as I've said, awareness, education, but also then some of the technology that's enabled, and whether it be, you know, lockdown devices, whether it be VPNs, whatever it might be that makes the most sense for them, depending on the risk appetite that they've got and depending on the response they get from their users.
Mm-hmm. I have done some research that indicates there's a bit of a disconnect. So my understanding is that, well, the majority of businesses and nonprofits do recognize the importance of cybersecurity. That high percentage does not reflect in the organizations that have specific policies around cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Why the disconnect? I mean, the obvious answer is organizations can implement policy, but why would an organization understand the importance of it and then not take action to ensure that there's a policy that protects their business assets?
Yeah, I think there's multiple reasons for that. It's unrealistic for a board member or for boards in general, I think, to have visibility over every single policy that exists within an organization. So it may well be that in certain instances, you know, that is being delegated down to a level where perhaps a policy doesn't exist for a variety of different reasons. I think that what is important is to step back from that. And for businesses of all shapes, sizes, and geographic spread to be saying, you know, what is it that we're trying to protect here? What is the importance of the information? Because you have to start small. You can't, you know, protect the whole organization. So you have to identify your critical assets. You have to then create policies around the protection of those first and foremost. For some, that's relatively easy. You know, if you happen to be in a highly regulated environment, then an external source is going to be telling you what you have to be protecting, what you have to have as a policy and so on. If you're not, it's a little bit more tricky. And some organizations, you know, may prefer certain standards or frameworks over others. And so I think it's quite a complex issue. I mean, my first reaction to that question was, well, why wouldn't you have a policy? I mean, it seems pretty obvious.
Right.
You know, if you're an ISF member, then certainly you can refer to the standard of good practice that gives you all of that. And so I suppose from my position, it's a little bit startling that some organizations don't have it in place. But then when you think it through, perhaps it isn't so much, because again, it points to this disconnect that exists between the running of the business and what, for perhaps still some organizations, is viewed as being a technical issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, you know, that's something that the technical people deal with rather than the business as a whole. And that's certainly one of the misconceptions that we need to break down.
Right. Well, let's talk about best practices. If a board wants to protect their assets, then they make backups. And then they're okay, right? right?
In theory, yes. I think that you know, businesses run on data, don't they, to state the obvious. And so what you have to be doing, if you're looking at how to recover from some form of breach or attack, denial of service perhaps, is how are you going to preserve access to that data and the integrity of that data and the confidentiality of that data? A lot of organizations are moving fairly rapidly to the cloud for storage, and that makes perfect sense.
Businesses of all sizes, not just small, but major organizations.
Large ones as well. I mean, there's research, I think, from Gartner that points to a number of enterprises closing down their own data centers over the next few years and moving to a much more agile environment. Well, in that agile environment, you have to pay attention to the storage and protection of your information, because even if you're putting it up into a cloud, you're still responsible for that data. And so I think what is important is to think about the day that you hope doesn't happen, which is when either a cloud provider is sabotaged or taken down, the data becomes corrupted, or you simply can't have access to it. And there are a number of different reasons why that might take place. Or, of course, if you put it into the worst scenario, perhaps, that we're seeing a ransomware attack. You know, we saw the damage things like NotPetya could do, WannaCry and so on. So those are the scenarios that you have to be planning for as a board, as an organization. And it is about, therefore, where your backups are. You probably do need to have offline backups for certainly your most critical assets. And you need to be doing that regularly. You need to be scenario planning. You need to be running through, rehearsing your response to some of these things. A lot of it is all about practice, so that when the situation does arise, you do know how to respond in some way and you can do it appropriately. But protecting your data has to be, I think, the number one focus that you as an organization place from a cybersecurity resilience standpoint.
So that is something that has to come from the board on down. That's not something that you delegate to your IT guy in the basement. Protect
it's about
data.
Risk. It's about risk, Tavia. So it's about the management of your data within a risk environment. The board sets the appetite for risk. And so that's where it has to start. I would expect a board to be reviewing its risk register on a regular basis, on an ongoing basis. And certainly I would expect to see that appearing in there. It may appear in a number of different guises. It may be related to the customer, for instance. It may be related to certain products that they have. Fundamentally, though, it's about protecting the data that goes into those different elements. And as I say, it should sit on the risk register, should be reviewed regularly, and you should be running scenario exercises that allow you to look at how you recover in the event of loss.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about what the board should do. And I think you've just started there, that your cybersecurity has to be integrated into your risk appetite. Does it also have to be integrated into your goals and your plans?
I think it does. I mean, you know, if you ask me what my vision for cybersecurity is going forward, it is one where we begin to segment, if I could put it that way, the whole piece in a number of ways. What I mean by that is that I think there is a role, will continue to be a role, for what I would term IT security. So the technical components of it, you know, things like the right levels of software that you have in place, the patching and that kind of thing. Security operations, for instance, would fit into IT security for me. Then I think you're going to have the other piece, which is becoming increasingly important, which is the role of the business in security. So I talk a lot about the fact that the CISO and cybersecurity team should be integrated into the business. They shouldn't be standalone units.
Mm-hmm.
They should be working collaboratively in the business. And so I think that we will eventually get to this environment where you have the technical security piece, the IT security piece, whatever that might look like, and then the business driving every other element. And for me, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does mean that we've reached a point of understanding the importance of technology to our businesses and the importance of securing and acting appropriately with that technology in our business. And then we get away from some of the challenges that we're now talking about. Because if we're talking about how we're going to expand a product line, of course we're talking about cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
We want to understand where our third parties are. We want to understand what levels of security they have around some of our blueprints, for instance, around some of the way in which our manufacturing operations might be working. That's very different from where we are today, of course, where we're still much more silo-driven.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how I see things going in the future.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate your perspective on this, as always. Next week, let's talk about the skills shortage and the role the board can play in addressing that, as well as the board's evolving role as cybersecurity and technology become further integrated into all levels of business. In the meantime, listeners, if you're enjoying this podcast, not only do we hope you subscribe to it, but we'd love it if you'd share it with other people you think it would benefit. And please visit our website, securityforum.org, for research, practical tools, and guidance that address current topics, and are used by ISF members worldwide to overcome the wide-ranging information security challenges that impact their businesses today. We're on Twitter at Security Forum if you want to reach out through social media. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.